are here, you're at the perfect time as we dive in to part two of this series that we have been calling Kingdom Culture. And if you're here for the very first time during this particular series, what you need to know about this series is simply this. We believe with all of our hearts that this series is perfect for two different groups of people. The first group of people is this. If you're sitting there this morning and you're like, man, I don't even have a relationship with Jesus Christ. I got invited here. I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know if I really want to be here. I'm not so sure about this whole Christianity thing. This series is designed specifically for you, and this is why. Because during this series, you get a behind-the-curtain look at what the church is supposed to be like. You get a sneak peek into what we believe with all of our hearts that we are being called to and the ways in which we are striving to be better than what we've been in the past. And here's the good news, that as we move through this series and we underline what the local church is being called to, if you're sitting there and you're saying, man, I don't have a relationship with Jesus, I don't know about this whole church thing, there is no responsibility due to you throughout this entire series. But we also believe that this series is perfect for a second group of people. If you're sitting there and you are a Christ follower or you do call Core Community Church home, we believe with all of our hearts that this series is specifically designed for you as well. Because this series has the potential in our lives to change the way in which we talk and to change the way in which we walk. And the reason we change the way we walk and we change the way we talk is this, is because we believe with all of our hearts that the world at its worst needs the church at its best. And if we were being ridiculously honest for a moment, what we'd be forced to admit is this. We, church, haven't always been that. I, as a Christ follower, haven't always been that. That there is work to be done and growth to be had in every single one of our lives and the ways in which we talk and the way in which we walk in our lives. And this series gives us an opportunity. This series has the potential to be a turning point in our lives, in our following of Christ, and also as an organization called the local church. And several weeks ago, we introduced this reality to you. That we believe with all of our hearts the best way for us to kick off a series about what it looked like to bring a piece of the kingdom of heaven, a piece of the kingdom culture to the culture in which we live was not to do service in this room, was not to kick off a message series, but was rather for us to actually put our money where our mouth is and to go out into our world, into our culture, and to bring something different to the table. And so a couple of weeks ago, we did our annual Stand for Shelby. And across 22 different project sites, we had over 205 of you linking arms together on the one day for the sake of our city, for the sake of our neighborhoods. And whether you got to experience that day or not, we didn't want to miss an opportunity to celebrate what happened and the impact that was made on that day. And we thought the best way for us to celebrate together was for you to get a look back at what actually happened. Check this out. Isn't that incredible? And you see, what we want you to know this morning is this, is that a day like that and an impact like that wasn't possible without every single one of the 205 of you being a part of that day. Every single one of you making a statement with your time and your energy that I'm willing to give up my own preferences for the sake of someone else's eternity. And that day was what it was because we as the church were willing to link arms and become the epitome of what this series is all about. That we were willing to bring a slice of the kingdom of heaven to earth through work boots and work gloves and chocolate chip cookies in one single day. And we believe with all of our hearts that a day like this epitomizes not just what we as the local church is being called to be for, but it also epitomizes what we as individual Christ followers are being called to every single day of our lives. That we have an opportunity that's been laid out before us in the world in which we live, in the culture in which we live, and to the neighborhoods we walk into, and the workplaces we're a part of, and every social media interaction we have, and every parenting moment with our kids, and every conversation we have with our spouse, there's an opportunity for us to bring a slice of the kingdom of heaven into that place. And when we change the way we talk, and we change the way we walk, to have just a little bit more kingdom culture inside of us, guess what happens? A little piece of the kingdom comes with us everywhere we go. And the reason that's such a big deal, and the reason that should be such a part of our lives and our calling and our everyday steps, is because the guy in which we're following, this guy named Jesus, was all about that very thing. In fact, he made it clear time and time again throughout the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, firsthand accounts of what they saw a man named Jesus do 2,000 years ago. Not some stories in a storybook, but real life in a history book of what took place on this earth. What we heard Jesus say again and again were these words, that this is why I was sent, to bring a slice of the kingdom of heaven and what eternity could look like to earth. So that the people in the culture in which I live and you live can see that something better is possible. And we find that very thing in the book of Luke chapter 4. In fact, we introduced this text last week, and I wanted to bring it back to light so that every single one of us, regardless of if we were here last week or not, could get a little bit of insight into what Jesus saw as his purpose and his driving force in his time here on this earth. And so this morning, what I challenge you to is this, to grab that weekly that you got when you came in. And if you crack it open right now, you'll find a notes page on the inside. You can follow along with us as we move through the text. You can even fill in some blanks as we go, or everything will come up on the screen for you as well. But here is what Jesus says in the book of Luke, chapter 4, starting in verse 43. But he, meaning Jesus, replied, I must preach the good news of the kingdom of God in other towns too, because that is why I was sent. In this moment, Jesus is saying, man, I got to talk about the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven. I'm here to bring a slice of the kingdom of heaven to as many towns as I can possibly bring it to. That is why I was sent. It's like in this moment, Jesus was saying, I was sent to open the door to the kingdom of heaven. But you were sent to colonize it. I was sent to open the door of the kingdom of heaven. You were sent to make heaven more crowded. And the way in which you make heaven more crowded is by the way in which you talk and the way in which you walk every single day of your lives. And every business meeting and every neighborhood gathering and every parenting moment and every interaction you have on Facebook, you make the kingdom more crowded by the way in which you talk and the way in which you walk every single day. You see, the church is here to make the invisible kingdom visible. But how? How do we go about bringing a slice of the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom culture, to the culture and the world in which we live? How do we bring it to our city and our neighborhoods and our workplaces and our households? Well, it's simple. We bring it by what we say and what we do every single day. That when we change the way we talk and we change the way we talk, we have an ability to change the world around us. And the reality is that one of the key components to bringing kingdom culture to earth is how we talk every single day. is the language that we use in our everyday lives. Because when we look close enough and get honest enough, what we're forced to admit is this truth, is that language creates culture. Language determines culture. Language even reveals culture. We know this when we look closely at any successful organization in our world today, right? That just by the language in which they use and the catchphrases in which they've made a part of their DNA, we can signify the heart of that organization and who that organization is. For example, we all know some of these places simply by this: just do it. Nike, right? Eat fresh. Subway. Taste the rainbow. Skittles. The quilted quicker picker upper. Bounty, yeah. Some of y'all have opened that package before. We're going to date ourselves. Where's the beef? Wendy's taking us back in time. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it. McDonald's, yes. You see, language always reveals the heart of the organization. And if that's true about the organizations in which we witness, why couldn't we also make the correlation that that's also true in our own individual lives? That the language we use on a daily basis reveals our hearts. The language in which we use on a daily basis signifies whether we as individuals are capable of making an impact for the kingdom of heaven. Of whether or not we are capable of bringing a slice of the kingdom of heaven to the earth in which we live. You see, that's what we are being called to. And there's no better representation of this truth, that our language reveals our heart, than this story we find Jesus tell just a few chapters later from the one we read in Luke chapter 4. That Jesus tells this story that we know as a parable. He takes this real life, present day illustration, and he relates it to their lives, and it relates biblical truth into their lives. And Jesus tells this story about these two guys and the ways in which they talk that reveal their heart. We pick up this story in the book of Luke, chapter 18, starting in verse 9. It goes like this. Then Jesus told this story to some who had great confidence in their own righteousness and scorned everybody else. Basically, he told this story to every single one of us. We've all been here a time or two in our lives. Two men went to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee, and the other was a despised tax collector. Now here, this story is starting different than many of Jesus' other parables, because when we see Jesus talk in parables, there's a lot of times where Jesus brings two characters to the table, and what he does is he brings one beloved character to the table and one hated character to the table, and then by the ending, he plays the switcheroo. Like, here is the Jewish rabbi, and here is the Samaritan that all of you Jews hate. And then in the end, the one who makes the right choice is the Samaritan who all of you hate, and the one who makes the wrong choice is the Jewish rabbi. But here, Jesus tells this parable, and he puts them on equal footing, because he's like, hey, all you Jews, you don't like either of these dudes. Like the Pharisees, the leaders of the religious law, they've been all about these rules that you could never live up to and pointing a finger at you that you'll never be good enough. And then on the other hand, you've got the tax collector who all they do is come to your house once a month and steal your money from you, and they put some in their back pocket because they've overcharged you. You don't like either of these guys. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed this prayer. I thank you, God, that I am not like other people, cheaters, sinners, adulterers. I'm certainly not like that tax collector. I fast twice a week, and I give you a tenth of my income. But the tax collector stood at a distance and dared not even lift his eyes to heaven as he prayed. Instead, he beat his chest in sorrow, saying, Oh God, be merciful to me, for I am a sinner. I tell you this sinner, not the Pharisee, returned home justified before God. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. You see, in this one story, Jesus is making this statement. We have two different characters on two opposite ends of the spectrum who say two totally different things. And Jesus makes this statement that the things you say reveal your heart. Your words matter. The way in which you talk and every interaction you have matters. It reveals whether you are able to be who I have called you to be. And if that's the truth that Jesus is revealing in this parable, that our words matter, that our language matters, then the question we must answer this morning is this: what's your language? What words are you using on a daily basis within the context of your marriage, within the context of your interactions with your kids, within your workplace, within your neighborhoods, on your social media platforms? What's your language? And the question expands broader than that. The question we collectively must ask is this: as the church, what's our language? What are we communicating every single day? Are we communicating grace and love and mercy and truth? Are we communicating the hope of Jesus Christ, or are we pointing a finger? Are we casting blame? The things you say matter. And once we answer that question, we're forced to move forward with another question. Are you willing to change your language to make an impact in this world? Am I willing to change the way in which I talk and the way in which I walk in order to make a greater impact on this world for the sake of the kingdom, for the sake of eternity? It's a question we should be asking and answering every single day of our lives to make sure that we're on mission and we're driving forward for what God wants for us and the plan that He has in people's lives, not just for their time on earth, but for all of eternity. And the reality is that if we ask that question, there are four distinct things that I believe with all of my heart, that if we begin to shift our language and the things we say more towards these four distinct statements, then the rest of our language and the way in which we talk will shift with it. But what you need to know is this, is that when you walk into a room like this and you pull out your weekly and at the top you read a title of four things we should say more often, what comes to your mind, I'm willing to guess, almost automatically is this: oh boy, here we go. We're going to get four statements that are like these holier-than-thou, ultra-religious statements. I don't know that I signed up for that. Or we're going to get these four statements that are like top of the mountaintop battle cry statements, like these fierce statements that we can charge into life with. And if you have expectations for either of those two, what you need to know right now is this: is that you are going to be disappointed. Because the statements that we are being challenged to make in our everyday lives and shift our language around are not either of those two. They're far harder than that. But what I believe with all of my heart is this: is that if you and I are courageous enough to begin to make these four statements, yes, they will be difficult statements to make, but they will be some of the most impactful statements that we can make to bring a slice of the kingdom of heaven to this earth. These statements have the ability to slowly change the culture around us. And I believe that it starts here. That if we want to bring a slice of the kingdom of heaven, a slice of kingdom culture to the culture of our lives, it begins by being people who are willing to say this phrase more often: I don't know. I don't know. You see, many times we think that we look smarter by always having answers. But did you know that oftentimes in our lives, we actually look smarter by using the phrase, I don't know? And I get it that this one is incredibly difficult for us to say, because over time, every single one of us in this room, I'm willing to bet, have chased the myth that we always have to have all the right answers, right? That when someone comes to us with a question, if we want to be the best and the smartest human beings possible, if we want to be the smartest friends in their lives, we always have to have all the right answers. And if you're anything like me, this is where I get sucked into, right? Every single one of us have this pull in our heart to be a know-it-all, okay? Whether we like that language or not, buckle in for just a second. I told you these were going to be difficult. That every single one of us have this craving inside of us to have all the answers, that we want to be a know-it-all. And what I believe with all of my heart is that the way in which the church becomes a greater force moving forward is if we become a place that is less and less populated with know-it-alls. That we become a place that is full of people filled with humility, willing to acknowledge the fact that I don't always have the answer. And I'm not going to chase the myth to this point anymore. And here's where this is totally just me, and y'all have never done this before. That as people come to me seeking answers, that as they ask questions, I so desperately feel the need to have the answers that sometimes when I don't have the answer, you know where my heart gets pulled? Just be confident and make something up. And then hope and cross your fingers they don't go back and fact check you. Right? Some of y'all are smiling because you're humble enough to know you've been there before, right? You've sat in my shoes, that there's been this pull on you of like, I don't know what the answer is, but if I just talk quick enough and confidently enough, they'll believe that whatever comes out of my mouth is the right answer, because they obviously are asking me because they don't have the answer either. And so I'll just act like I do. And we don't want those three words, I don't know, to come out of our mouth. Or maybe it's the moments of our lives where we're walking with another person through the hurt of their life. And in the moments of hurt, the moments of despair, where they've lost someone or something precious to them, we feel like I don't know is an inadequate response. I don't know doesn't bring the comfort that they're looking for. And so I got to come up with something better than I don't know why you're walking through this. And we become those people we all love to hate that are just about throwing around cold comfort. You know those people I'm talking about, right? It's the dude in your life who, no matter what circumstances people are up against, he just wants to throw out Romans 8:28. Like, oh, but God's going to work this all out for your good. And you're like, come on, man. My spouse just died. I just got diagnosed with cancer. I just lost my job. She just broke up with me 5 minutes ago. And that's the best that you have to offer. Oh, but God's going to work this all out for your good. And we become those people that we want to punch in the face and like, oh, hey, that black eye, God's going to work that out for your good, right? Like, why don't we recognize that we are called to something bigger than just throwing around answers? And we have an ability in the moments of people's hurt and despair to make a statement that I don't have the answers, but what I can give you is my presence. Because what I know about the moments of hurt and despair of my life is this, is that your presence is far more powerful than your answers in those moments. I don't need you to fix it. You're not going to fix it. Your answers are not going to fix it. But you sitting beside me in this, you journeying along this mess of my life with me, that will help. I don't need you to tell me Romans 8:28 and then walk out of my life. I need you to look at me and say, I don't know why you're going through this. But what I do need you to know is this, I'm here. And I don't know the answers to why God is allowing this to happen. But what I can promise you is I'm willing to journey with you through this mess for as long as it takes until God reveals the why to us at some point in our lives. Your presence is far more powerful than your answers. And yet we just keep coming back to this, I have to defend Christ. I have to have an answer to everything that happens in this world and why God is doing what he's doing. And in that illogical state, what we fail to recognize is this. God's ways are higher than your ways. His thoughts are higher than your thoughts. He knows better. He sees farther. God was here yesterday and today, and he will be here tomorrow. There are parts of that that are just unexplainable. So why do we keep trying? There will always be this sense of wonder, this inexplainable side of God. That's what makes him worthy and dignified of our worship. Because he's so much bigger than us. He's the creator and sustainer of the universe. We can't even fathom that, what it looks like to hold the world in his hands. And so how would we begin to even explain that? It's not possible. It's not worth our time. Sometimes we just need to be people who are willing to acknowledge that I don't know why this is happening. But it's like the moments of our lives where the pancake I made this morning was supposed to explain why I do everything I do. It's just not logical. My ways are higher than the pancake's ways. My thoughts are higher than the pancake's thoughts. We just can't fathom everything. And so it's not worth us always trying to give a defense and an explanation for God in every corner of our lives. You see, we have to be mature enough sometimes to realize that we aren't always smarter by having an answer. Sometimes we're actually smarter by saying, I don't know. What would it look like in your life and in your relationships to begin practicing that? To recognize that my presence in people's lives is far. And then we become people who are willing to say more frequently, I can learn something from them. I can learn something from them. You see, in this story, in Luke chapter 18, what we find are two guys who are on totally opposite ends of the spectrum. Not just in what they say, but also in how they operate and in what they believe. What we know about the Pharisee and even the Sadducees and the religious leaders of the day is this, is that they were people who believed and their lives were predicated on all truth. There were rules you had to live by, and it was black and white, and if you didn't follow the rules, you were out. There's no middle ground. There's no grace in this. It is 100% truth. And what we know about the tax collector was this. He lived a life that was predicated on all grace. That I'm broken, I'm messed up, I've cheated people, and God has grace that covers that. His mercy covers that. And I'm not going to stop being a tax collector. Like, I'm not going to stop doing the things that I'm doing. Why? Because I have a God that gives me grace in that. And so he was 100% grace. And I'm going to do what maybe the church has never done in all of time. I'm going to throw a bone for a second to the Pharisee. Do you realize that if the tax collector would have spent some time around the Pharisee, that he actually would have learned and grown from that interaction? And vice versa. That the Pharisee would have spent just a little bit of time around the tax collector, he would have learned and grown from that interaction as well. That if these two men could have gotten past their differences and the opposite ends of the spectrum that they found themselves on and actually sat down in a room with each other and learned from each other and seen what the other person was going through and what brought them to their conclusion, you know what might have happened? These two men might have found themselves somewhere in the middle where Jesus actually was. Because Jesus wasn't 100% truth and he wasn't 100% grace. Jesus was all truth and all grace. He operated with the fullness of both of those things that these men didn't fully comprehend being on far sides of the spectrum. And I told you this was going to get rough, so buckle in for just a second because we're about to parallel. We see this very thing happening before our eyes in the world in which we live. That we have the far left in our country, and we have the far right in our country. Two opposite ends of the spectrum who have become increasingly more unwilling to listen to the other side. And no matter which side we fall on, there is this tendency in all of our lives and in all of our hearts to surround ourselves with the echo chamber that believes what we believe and thinks how we think. And if we spend all of our time around people who just believe what we believe and think what we think, they will spend their entire lives simply affirming everything that you think and everything that you believe. But is that the healthiest for us? Is that the healthiest for bringing a slice of the kingdom of heaven to the culture of earth in which we live? Or is there a better choice? Is there a way in which we can say, I'm on the far right, you're on the far left. I'm on the far left, you're on the far right. It's not about agreeing with you, but can I shake your hand? Can I sit down in a room and listen to you? Can I look you in the eye as you're talking and have enough maturity to understand where you're coming from and what you've been through that's brought you to this point. Y'all, making the statement, I can learn something from them, doesn't mean that you're going to flip to their side of the belief system. It doesn't mean that you're going to change everything about yourself. It just acknowledges that I don't know because I don't know. You've heard me say this time and time again before. So many of us, myself included at times in my life, we operate under this premise. Well, I just don't understand how they could believe that. I just don't know how they could come to that conclusion. You don't know because you don't know. You don't know how they could believe that because we haven't taken the time to know what they've walked through, what their upbringing has been like, what they've been through that's hurt them and stung them and brought them to a place in their life in which their belief system is wrapped around that occurrence in their life, that hurt in their life, that despair that they've suffered, that thing that they've walked through, the family that they've been attached to. You don't know because you don't know. And the question we have to ask as mature Christ followers is this: are we willing to learn something today? Are we willing to learn something that we don't know, and maybe even something that we don't agree with, for the sake of the kingdom? Hello. Have you heard that one before? Probably not. That one's not floating around on social media. Are you willing to listen to someone you don't agree with for the sake of the kingdom? That's what's on the table. That's the opportunity we have. That's who Jesus Christ was, and that's the slice of the kingdom of heaven he brought to this earth, and he is calling you and I to bring that exact same slice to every single piece of culture we walk into. See, the question we have to answer is this: do you really want to bring an irresistible piece of the kingdom of heaven to this earth? If the answer is yes, then we have to shift our language. And we have to start saying, I don't know. And we have to start saying, I can learn something from them. And then we have to start saying, it's going to take more than that to offend me. It's going to take more than that to offend me. You see, in this story that we keep coming back to in Luke 18, I can only imagine as we read this story that the Pharisee walked into that temple bent on, I'm going to offend some people today. And probably the reason that the Pharisee walked in that way is because he had been hurt in some way. And so he is like, in my state of hurt, I'm going to lash out and I'm going to make sure I hurt somebody else. So he's like, I'm going to call people out, the sinners, the adulterers. Oh, and there's that dude over there that I know is less than me. And so I'm going to point my finger at him. I'm going to talk loud enough so that he hears me to make sure that he hears me say, and I'm glad I'm not like the tax collector. I don't steal from people. I give a tenth of my money back to God. And I fast. Ha, ha, ha. The Pharisee walked in, throwing around offenses. And the reality that you and I have to come to grips with is this: we live in a world in which that is also inevitable, in which we will encounter every single day offenses by people we are in relationship with. It happens. It's an inevitability because we are all broken and we hurt each other and we do things for our own good at times at the expense of somebody else. So much so that Jesus wanted to drive home this point. Just one chapter earlier from this story, in Luke chapter 17, Jesus makes this statement. Then he said to the disciples, it is, help me out, what's the next word? Impossible. There's no maybes in this. There's not like, well, it's highly unlikely. No. Jesus is like, it is impossible that no offenses should come. It is impossible in your life here on this earth that you won't encounter offenses every single day. But here's the shift in kingdom culture. And if you're taking notes, you're going to want to write this one down. Offenses are an event. Offended is a decision. Offenses are an event. Offended is a decision. We get to make the choice at how we react to the offenses that other people take out against us. We get to make that choice. And here's the bad news on one end. If we choose to fall in with the culture around us and become easily offended, do you know what happens? You guys have heard the saying before, right? Hurt people, hurt people. Well, you can take out and replace a couple of those words, and the statement is still 100% true. Offended people offend people. When we become offended, we go out of our way to offend others. Why? Because it's easy in my human condition to believe that I am elevated if I push somebody else down. And so somebody else has pushed me down by offending me, and the only way I can elevate myself back up is by offending somebody else and pushing them down and elevating myself up above them. Offended people offend people. But the crazy thing is we have been given a different option. We have been given something that is countercultural and has the ability to change the culture around us through a simple statement of the offenses you can throw at me, it's going to take more than that to offend me. I will not be thrown off my mission. I will not allow my testimony and my witness and the God in which I am bringing to this earth, I will not allow that picture to be clouded by you seeing me become offended, by you seeing me say things I shouldn't say in my state of being offended. I won't dip to that level. It's going to take more than that to get me there. I have a bigger purpose to serve. I have a bigger impact to make than to constantly be offended by the things of this world. And Jesus makes it clear towards the end of this story about the Pharisee and the tax collector when in verse 14 he writes this, "I tell you, this sinner, not the Pharisee, returned home justified before God." The man who chose not to become offended by the Pharisee pointing a finger at him, but in turn just chose simply to see his own brokenness. That's what happened in this story. The Pharisee first pointed out, "I'm not like him. He's broken. He's messed up." And do you see the response that the tax collector gave? "Yep, he's right. I'm broken. I'm messed up." He didn't become offended. He had the mindset of, it's going to take more than that to offend me. Then I'm going to rise higher than that. Then I'm not going to allow what I have been called to be derailed by what somebody else in this world can do. And you see, sometimes what we have to come to grips with is this. We have to become people who stop being shocked by the world being the world. And maybe that's the first step in the right direction. That we stop being shocked by the world operating as the world. Instead of being mad and offended, what we see is the opportunity. Is that when the world acts like the world, we have an opportunity to bring a slice of the kingdom of heaven that is so much better than what they're living and what they're experiencing in their life to the table of their life, to the table of their circumstances. And we have an opportunity by the way we react and the way we don't get easily offended and the humility we bring to the table to introduce them to something better, to a grace and a love and a mercy that this world desperately needs. But it only happens when we are capable of saying, "I'm not going to get offended by that. I'm going to be bigger than that. I'm going to see a greater purpose than that. It's going to take more than that to offend me." And then we finish with the hardest one of all. That if we want to be people who change the culture around us and bring a piece of the kingdom culture to our earth, we have to be people who are willing to say, "I was wrong. Ouch." That's a hard one to choke out, am I right? But Jesus makes it clear in the very last line, the mic drop moment of this entire story, when he says this, "For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." that if you want to change the world around you, it starts by acting humble. And you're saying, Ben, well, I don't know how to act humble. How do I act humble? Well, start by talking humble. Well, how do I talk humble? Start saying those three words every once in a while. I was wrong. I didn't get it right. I made a mistake. Then the interactions with our kids where we've gone too far and we've blown something out of proportion like we talked about last week. Will it even matter in 100 years that my kid wanted to do that? And we've gone berserk, that we come back and in our parenting relationship, we're people who are willing to say, man, I got that one wrong. Will you forgive me? I know you're 4. I know you're 8. I know you're 16 and you think you know it all. But I'm willing to humble myself and to say, I was wrong, I made a mistake. See, far too often I hear this joke going around. My spouse is never wrong. And you see, if you've ever heard your spouse say that, they're only partially joking. The reason they're only partially joking is because they make that statement because they've never heard you say those three words. They've never heard you come to the table and say, I was wrong. But hear me out on this. Great leaders say that. Great parents say that. Great spouses say that. Great kingdom culture agents say that. And we say that because we acknowledge this truth. Humanity doesn't have nearly as much of a problem with our sin as they do with our inability to own that sin. Our world doesn't desperately need us to be right. Our world desperately needs us to be real. That our humility and our transparency and our vulnerability is countercultural, but it brings something to the table that in being countercultural has the potential to change our culture. To change our world in a positive way. Realness is best personified by the humility with which you talk. But real humility starts with owning up to it when we make mistakes, when we don't get it right. Our language always portrays our hearts. Do you have any kingdom culture in your language? Do you have any kingdom culture in your heart? If not, the shift is as simple as these four phrases. This shift brings something different to the table that our world desperately needs. But I get it. Y'all, I promise I get it. These four things are not easy to say. I'm not good at saying these four things consistently in my life, in my relationships, in my workplace interactions, in my social media posts. And in the face of how difficult it is to say some of these things, we find ourselves asking the question, Ben, how do I say those things? How do I say something that the world around me wants me to believe shows a sign of weakness? How do I say something that forces me to swallow my pride? How do I say something that makes me look wrong? How do I say something that makes me look less than? That robs me of value and worth in my life or my marriage or my parenting or my workplace? Where do I start? You see, the best place for us to start is this. It's to recognize those things the world wants us to believe about those four statements just isn't true. Our value, our worth, our identity is not found in us being right. Our value, worth, and identity isn't found in us being better than others. No, it's so much better than that. Our value, worth, and identity is found in who Christ says I am. That our Creator looks at us and says, nothing you could ever do would cause me to degrade you and lower the value I see when I look at you. You are my masterpiece, the pinnacle of my creation. You are my child. You have been chosen. You have been redeemed. You are worthy. Not because you're morally superior to somebody else, not because you're really good at hiding your failure. No, 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 because you become really good at being bigger than that. And knowing that, saying these four phrases don't push you down, they actually lift you up. Did you catch that? In this last passage, in verse 14, he says, "But if you humble yourself, you will be exalted." Do you know what that translates to? If in the world's eyes you make yourself lower, in my eyes you make yourself higher. Hello, y'all. You know what that means in the eyes of God, that when we bring ourselves to the courageous place of saying these four things for the sake of the kingdom, we don't become less than. We become more than. That's the opportunity God has given us through our language, through what we say. But are we willing to change what we say for the sake of the kingdom? Are we willing to change what we say for the sake of someone else's eternity? The opportunity lies at hand. Will you snatch it with me? Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for the value and the worth that you see in us, for the statement you speak over us that we are your masterpiece. Not because we're always right, not because we're better than others, not because we're good at hiding our failures. No, 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 no. You sent your son to cover up all those things. You sent your son to make us right in your eyes, even when we were wrong. So how could we become world changers in a bigger way? By humbling ourselves and being more consistent and saying, I don't know. And I can learn something from them. And it's going to take more than that to offend me. And I was wrong. God, may we find our confidence that our value and worth is found in who you say I am. And that pushes us full go with your kingdom culture out into our world. It's in your name that I pray.